Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Friday, everybody. He's Adam Harahuck. I'm Sean Cantwell, coming at you from somewhere in downtown Detroit, because you know very well, if you've listened to this show for any amount of time, that I don't miss opening day for anything. In fact, if you were listening over on WTGV this morning, I was on with our old pal Eddie Fury doing a little bit of Tigers talk, because we actually got to see the game at Comerica Park.
So nice.
Good time all the way around. But naturally, that wasn't going to stop me from being here and doing this with you today.
Yeah, I appreciate you.
We had to leave you behind in the physical sense, but we certainly weren't going to leave you behind in spirit.
It made sense. I get it. I'm assuming we're doing unsolicited advice today.
We have to do unsolicited advice. Of course, we're going to have to talk a little bit of Red Wings.
Yes, yeah, we're going to do that. They got a big game tonight.
So there's plenty of sports things to talk about that have nothing to do with the Tigers taking on, you know, the poverty franchise that is the Oakland Athletics. A team that drew, I think, 500 people combined to their home opening weekend?
Well, yeah, they had some sort of protest because they're moving to Las Vegas. And it was like a bunch of people showed up in the parking lot for the opening day. And then once the first pitch, they all took off. Yeah, that'll show them. That's a good idea.
Exactly, and it could be, you know, bad karma doing things like this, but I decided I was going to do this bit regardless of whether or not we won or lost today's game. I don't know if you've heard, they're also now apparently, and I'm not sure that it's because of the protests and everything else, but it was announced yesterday or Wednesday, that apparently this will be the last season in Oakland no matter what. The stadium's not going to be ready for a few years, but apparently they're going to play in Sacramento starting next season until 2028.
Oh, wow.
So they're not even going to stick around in the market in which they're currently in. They're going to go play, apparently, in Sacramento for a couple years while they wait for them to build a stadium that can accommodate a sport being played in the middle of the summer.
Wow. I mean, I laugh because it's not my team, but wow. How upset would you be if you know, all of a sudden, you know, you're in Oakland, and your team's just like, we're leaving. You're a diehard A's fan. And you're like, we're leaving. We don't care. It doesn't matter if we have no place to go. We're leaving.
To be fair, there's only like 3 Oakland A's fans left, I think. So we could probably literally call one of them up on the phone right now and ask them, and probably have a fair chance of getting that response.
Yeah, they all were like, oh, the 74 A's? Absolutely. Love that team.
You so couldn't wait to get out of Oakland that you're going and playing in Sacramento for 3 years. Like, I'd be rather upset if I were an Oakland fan, but like I said, there's only 5 of them left. Like, that's pretty bad, but also entirely, honestly, a little bit fitting. Because they're going to be in a stadium that has a fixed seat capacity of 10,624 fans, which is, quite frankly, more in line with the kind of attendance numbers that the A's are doing.
Yeah.
I mean, right now at the Coliseum, they draw about, 200 fans, and everyone hates the owner of the team. In Sacramento, I guess, you at least have half a chance because that, hey, we're just happy to have a quote-unquote major league franchise here. Maybe not, I mean, I guess it's debatable as to how much the Oakland A's are really a major league franchise at this point.
Yeah, right.
But they're not at least all currently completely poisoned against John Fisher and company the way that they are up by the bay there.
I tell you what, I'm hoping that wherever they, with Sacramento or LA, I hope they don't change the uniforms too much because growing up a baseball fan in the 80s, I really like the Athletics uniforms. I love the color schemes.
And I think that they're gonna keep all that. I mean, let's be honest, it's kind of a wandering franchise anyway. That this is going to be the Sacramento is gonna be like at least the fourth different city they played in, so Vegas will ultimately be 5th.
I've only known them Oakland. I mean,
there was Kansas City.
Okay.
They were Kansas City, they were in Philadelphia.
I only knew them as the Oakland A's.
Well, yeah, because like these moves all happened like before you were born,
right?
To be fair. Yeah, they started in Philly, moved to KC, and then ultimately moved to Oakland in like 68. So yeah, by the time all is said and done, Las Vegas will be the 5th city to play host to the A's. Apparently, there was a pitch that was made for a five-year lease extension at the Coliseum, but that meeting didn't go particularly well. Both sides are far apart on terms needed to agree on an extension. Like, apparently there was an extension fee that was reported to be somewhere, was reduced from $97 million to $60 million. Conversion fees for sharing the stadium with two soccer teams, an agreement that the Athletics would sell their share of the Coliseum, and a condition that MLB agree to put the city of Oakland at the front of the line for an expansion franchise. And apparently they wouldn't agree to literally any of that. And not only do we not want to be here, we don't want you to ever have any other sort of happiness ever by having a team here. We don't ever want you to have
Down the whole thing.
Just burn it all to the ground.
Pour salt on the ground so nothing will grow here again.
And just run out of town, napalming bridges, middle fingers ablazing. I can't think of a more perfectly fitting end to the tenure of the A's in Oakland than to do that and then agree to go play at a minor league stadium for the next 3 years. It's like literally the Arizona Coyotes of Major League Baseball. Yeah, it's kind of hilarious. We got a lot of stuff to do today. We'll get to the Red Wings coming up in a little bit, and maybe we'll touch on some things that aren't quite so sports-related and, of course, unsolicited advice. Ooh. It is happy hour. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back right after this. It is happy hour, and it's time once again for another arousing installment of Things Nobody Asked For. And today on Things Nobody Asked For, a college football super league.
Is this our answer to... basically, all the leagues, all the teams going to like two different leagues?
Kind of, sort of, maybe, but not entirely, but basically, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So there's been a proposal that's been made about potentially in college football splitting off a bunch of the major conferences and things into a super league of sorts. So this was something that came out of The Athletic yesterday. One league overseeing college football's highest level, no more conferences as we've known them, playoff berths being decided solely on the field, promotion and relegation for smaller schools, players being paid directly, NIL and the transfer portal managed. Apparently a group of influential leaders wants to make this all happen soon. They're pitching it as the best way forward for a sport they believe needs saving. And arguably it does. College football certainly in recent years has lost some of the cachet it once had. But I think they're going exactly the wrong way about doing it.
Well, I mean, here's the things I like about it. I mean, the players getting paid, I like that. The transfer portal, that had some problems to begin with. Then all of a sudden, I mean, it's a little bit more of a concise way to get teams into the playoffs. So far, I haven't found too much not to like.
Well, let me give you a few of the details here.
Okay.
So the current CST outline, this would basically replace the NCAA and the college football playoff more or less entirely.
Okay.
It would create a system that would have the top 70 programs, all members of the five former major conferences, plus Notre Dame and SMU, which just joined the ACC, as permanent members, and would encompass all 130-plus FBS universities. So the perpetual...
That's a lot of schools.
Yes. The perpetual members would be in 7-10 team divisions, joined by an 8th division of teams that would be promoted from the second tier. The 50-plus second division teams would have their way to compete their way into the upper division, creating a promotion system similar to the structure in European football leagues. The 70 permanent teams would never be in danger of moving down, while the second division would have the incentive of promotion and relegation. So basically, your Power 5 conferences would permanently be in this, also plus Notre Dame, whereas like your group of fives would have the opportunity to be promoted or relegated each year. So already, they're trying to structure this in a way that gives extra weight to the Power 5 conferences, you know, kind of like the thing that the commissioner of the SEC was talking about a few weeks ago in regards to wanting to revamp March Madness to get his conference more guaranteed bids.
Sure.
So you're telling me that there's like a separate class, like, oh, those other schools, they can play their way in or out of the league, but Rutgers gets to stay forever? How does that
fit? That's kind of messed up, right?
You're going to tell me that no matter what what Nebraska does. They are guaranteed to always be in this Super League, but you get a team like, I don't know, UC,
Western Michigan?
Yeah, you get a team like Western or Central or someone who actually does well and plays their way in, and they could lose that at any time and not be protected at all. I don't like that.
Well, that's happening right now anyway. So
then how is this an improvement?
I don't know. I think it's... So they can't say, all right, well, the Pac-12, all right, it's not really the Pac-12.
And well, I mean, like now it's just the Pac-2.
Yeah, it's the Pac-2.
Apologies to the Pac-2.
I think they're just trying to save some face when it comes to the official name of all these conferences. But
well, I think they know that ultimately the SEC, not the SEC, yeah, the SEC and the Big Ten basically control college football now. Like, all the perennial powerhouses that matter have been absorbed by one of those conferences or the other, with the exception of Notre Dame. Like they've got more or less a lock on the perennial contenders, so they figure they can like force, because like they're already with the college football playoff, mm-hmm. where they're trying to expand it yet again before it expands the first time.
Always a good idea.
Why didn't you just push for 16 in the first place? Because, you know, the second they approve 14, that's
well, yeah, no, you're gonna, yeah.
We really should talk about 16. We haven't played with the 12 yet. What are we doing?
Yeah, just hang out for a minute. Let's try this year and then move on from there.
Like, let's chill a little bit and let's see if this works, and then we'll worry about, you know, that later.
Right.
Now, so already, like, in that system, the Big Ten and the SEC are trying to guarantee themselves more automatic bids into that tournament, that playoff, much like they are in college basketball with the March Madness thing that they're proposing. Like, so already they're setting themselves up for that. So I don't see how this would be any sort of improvement over anything. So then they also, the playoffs would not require a selection committee, as the eight division winners and the eight wild cards from the top tier.
Okay, that part I like, because Alabama, I'm sorry, got screwed last year.
The wild card spots would be determined by record and tiebreakers, much like the NFL, which... Okay, now that part of it I like. Like, yeah. There should be some sort of...
I'm on board with that.
We don't need a... You're right. I don't want a selection committee deciding and making completely arbitrary rankings over things. But I also would have told you right now that why can't we just have then the top winner from the winner of each of the...
division.
Each conference now. Why can't we already have that be the case? Each Power 5 school, each Group of 5 school gets a... automatic in, then there's a wild card that, you know, Notre Dame and everyone else have to fight over.
The problem is you may have a third team in a conference go, you know, 12 and 0, and then you have a team that gets in because they went 11-1. I mean, if you go undefeated, I think that's almost like a definite bid into the playoffs.
That should be, but that also goes hand in hand with winning your division. Know what? There's no undefeated team out there that's losing their division.
What if the SEC
losing their conference?
What if every team in the SEC goes 12-0? What do you do then? What do you do then, Sean?
They all play each other. There's no...
Come on, Sean. All of a sudden, you're out of answers.
Where's that dodgeball when I need it?
I have no idea.
Don't you think for a second?
Anyway, no, I mean, point taken.
There's already like that would ensure that if you're talking division or conference champions, there's no way that that everyone wouldn't be represented as it is. But you know, the big conferences want a bigger slice of that pie because of course they do. Apparently, the Big Ten and the SEC aren't even taking this group's calls thus far.
Well, the Big Ten, they haven't set up their voicemail yet. So, I mean, let's give them some credit.
So, basically, it sounds like they're trying to do a lot of, like, soccer-style things, like with the promotion relegation, and also with, like, the universities would own a percentage of the
promotion regulation. No, it's like, what does that mean? It's like,
so, if it from, we'll take it from what they've proposed here, say if Western Michigan isn't in that group of 80 schools that get to contend for the playoffs that really matter every year in the big Super League. They're in the lower, basically the minor league division.
Sure.
If they win, if they finish off like the best or like win, I assume there's like a lower level championship game. If they win that, than they and like the next few best schools in that division would get moved up to the Super League. And then, like, whoever's currently there, like, the bottom three teams in that division get booted down to the minor leagues.
I love that.
I've been saying they should do this for years in other sports.
Yeah.
Like, can we demote the Pittsburgh Pirates to the minor leagues already? Or, like, the Arizona Coyotes? Can we send them down to the AHL?
Wouldn't that be great?
That would be amazing.
Yeah, bringing the Syracuse Crunch up. Actually, I don't even think... I think they're still... They're garbage now, but... Yeah,
bring the Grand Rapids Griffins up.
Griffins. Here comes the Detroit Red Wings versus the Grand Rapids Griffins. Heads up, folks. But yeah, I mean, we talked about that for years about the Pistons and the Lions. I mean, if you lose to this team, then you are down here and this team needs to come up. I mean, it makes sense.
So that
I love that.
I'm kind of okay with that too, to an extent, except that my issue with that, it should be open to everybody. If we can send down Central Michigan, I should be able to send down Rutgers too when they end up being terrible.
Absolutely, yeah. I thought that's what you meant.
No, no, because apparently the Big Ten and the SEC and like the major conferences would be exempt from that.
Oh no, there should be no exemption.
No, like their schools, as this plan has been described, like there's nothing like Rutgers cannot be demoted under any circumstances because they were a Big Ten school, so they're. They are grandfathered into the Super League and get to permanently stay there no matter what, unfortunately.
No, I want to see the Chippewas actually leapfrog Michigan State sometime. I want Michigan State to go back down a level. I want the Chippewas to come up. Up Chips.
We would literally never hear the end of that ever.
It'll never happen, but you know.
No, you're right. It won't.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that's great. Wouldn't that put a fire under any coach's keister? Or any team. It's like, okay, Rutgers, we've been talking about, we've been laughing about them for about an hour now. But if Rutgers, like,
it's so much
if we keep losing this game, we could be knocked down to a certain tier.
We could be demoted to the minor leagues?
Yeah.
Which we probably should have been like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
That would certainly up the level of competition. So
here comes the Syracuse Orange. They just leapfrogged you, bud. How do you feel about that?
Not great. Not great. Now, they don't have
a mascot. It's a fruit. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Right? Like, there's a couple, of course, things that would really keep this from, I think, becoming reality. Notably, the big TV contracts all these current leagues have that they are not going to necessarily want to part with.
Yeah.
Like, that's where the complication comes in. And also, that's the main reason I'm pretty sure why the SEC and the Big Ten have not taken the... And he calls from this group that's floating the Super League idea because they know that, well, we're already making all these untold millions, billions of dollars from Fox, ESPN, the way this contract is currently structured. We don't really want to cut into that slice of pie. Also, they're going to want more guarantees than what they're being given. Like, I even with all of their teams guaranteed to be in the major league no matter what, they feel like, well, we have the cards. Like, we hold all the cards, and we're sitting on a royal flush over here. And you've got a couple Joker cards in your hand somehow. Yeah. Like we know what we got. So I don't think that they have any incentive, considering that there's still talks that those two conferences could just break away and start their own Super League without the involvement of any of these other schools.
Oh, jeez.
Which
that would be ugly.
That would be ugly, and furthermore, it wouldn't be good for the sport. Like No,
it would not.
Like, it'd be great. It'd be okay, I guess, if you're a fan of one of these two schools, but then you're operating with a whole separate system. We have, like, the Big Ten SEC League, and then we have literal everybody else. And if you're not a fan of one of those schools, like, your season now literally means nothing. And that's one of the things that kind of worries me about all this. Plus, you know, you're already moving with the conferences expanding as much as they have. You're already moving towards a point where, like, the tradition and rivalries are becoming even more meaningless. Like, you're going to get shoved into a division with a bunch of schools that you have no relevance to you and basically wipe out things like having having the game every year with Michigan and Ohio State.
Oh, or having, that having would Michigan, so, oh, you got to have that.
Or not having Michigan and Michigan State player. You know, something.
Oh, no, you got to have that.
And that's the problem. Even with the expansion here, like they've talked that certain rivalry games might no longer happen every year, and that would only get worse if this major realignment were to happen. And it's just it's kind of wiping away again, like we said about college basketball plenty over the last couple of weeks. Like, it's taking away from what makes college sports and athletics so much fun. It is that there is something to be said for the tradition, the rivalries, like people really getting emotionally invested in all these things. Like, it feels like it takes something away from it, cheapens it, makes it more artificial. I don't know. Either way, I'm not entirely on board with it. Like, if don't get me wrong, if we can find a way to, you know, start relegating garbage teams out to like Division II or something, okay, I'm fine with it. But other than that, like this, a lot of it seems like it's going way too far for my taste.
Yes,
it is happy hour. He's Adam Harahuck. I'm Sean Cantwell, and it's that time of the week again. Doesn't matter what's going on, if it's opening day or whatever. There's always room for Sean and Adam's unsolicited advice.
Yes.
Where real people with real problems send real questions to real advice columnists. Unfortunately for them, we get our hands on them. We intercept, and quite frankly, we do a better job of this than the people who get paid to do this crap for a living.
Well, we certainly enjoy it.
Yeah, a few lives may be ruined in the process, but that's what happens when you party with us.
Collateral damage.
Exactly. Let's get right into this thing, shall we? Dear somebody who cares, I am the maid of honor for my best friend's wedding, which is happening this summer. It's a big job, and I've done my very best to step up in all the expected ways. Like other people who have faced this demanding role, constrained of friendship, but my friendship with Chloe, the bride, has survived just fine. So far, anyway. Mm-hmm. Last week, Chloe texted me to say she has just sent out the invitations and that William, my very steady boyfriend of several years, has not been invited. She texted me that she feels terrible about this, but this was because of serious space constraints. She has planned for 125 guests at the reception. Chloe has met William several times. We live out of state, and she knows that we live together. I'm completely shocked by this exclusion and don't know how to respond. Any ideas?
You're probably just now hearing about it because the bride has been mulling this over, trying to find a nice way to bring it up. But I mean, listen, as much as it sucks, it's her wedding, and it's, when you're doing things on such a level, you can't have everybody. So now you are tasked with telling your boyfriend, yeah, this is what's going on. And if he's like most guys, he's going to be like, so you're going to go out of town. I don't have to go to a wedding and I get the weekend to myself. Okay, I guess. So I don't know. I mean, does it leave a bad taste in your mouth, dear writer? Yes, absolutely. But unfortunately, that's how it happens. 125 people, they didn't have room for everybody that they wanted to invite. And somebody that they've just met a handful of times, somebody who lives out of state, who are you not going to invite? You're going to not invite a cousin? You're not going to invite a coworker, somebody they see on a regular basis? It's terrible that these decisions had to be made, but, you know, it's c'est la vie.
See, this is the difference between Adam and I, and this is why he's probably, in most respects, a far nicer person than I am. Because I'll tell you right now, if I'm invited to a wedding and Rachel isn't, I'm not going. If I'm asked to stand up in the wedding and you're not even going to do me the basic courtesy of inviting my longtime significant other, I'm not standing up in your wedding, I guess.
Right.
Like, I absolutely know. No, that's not happening. Like, that's, I get that there's a debate about plus ones and does everyone need to include a plus one in their wedding. But you're telling me out of 125 people, the person that the bride wants to stand up in the wedding, there's no room for their companion. You can go take a long walk off a short pier, man.
Well, I mean, I can't remember. In the letter, does it say how long she and the boyfriend have been together?
It does not. It just says that it's several years.
Oh, several. Okay.
Several years.
It's
so presumably more than five at least.
Yeah. So, yeah, that does seem very sticky situation. But I mean,
like, would you have stood up at my wedding had I not invited Dorothy, for instance?
If you would have lived out of state and she'd only met you a couple times.
It sounds like they've met more than a few times. Like, they've, again, several times, like, over multiple years. Like, if she lives out of state and it's close enough that, like, that she asked her to stand up in the wedding, it, the implication here is that she has also met the significant other many times over this same stretch. And she kind of basically says that in the letter.
Yeah. I don't know. I probably would have still stood up. Because, I mean, both avenues are bad, but I think one is less bad than the other. Does that make sense?
I guess, but like,
they're not saying, hey, we don't want your boyfriend to show up because he's ugly or anything like that. It's, you know, place constraints. I can't believe that they're so, that is so, stringent that they can't squeeze one more person.
Yeah, there's that too. And yeah. Also, 125 people, honestly, like, that's more people than you think it is. Like, we had a guest list of approximately 300 or so for the reception, the after party and stuff.
Yep.
Like, we're friends with a lot of people, so yeah, we can come up with enough people to fill that space. And granted, there wasn't a lot of family on my side to contend with, but I don't, like, that's still a decent amount of people that you should be able to fit the person who is most important to you, like, to have their partner here, especially because the maid of honor has to do a lot. Like, they're basically asked to, you know, kind of run the show a little bit, and, you know, keep things running smoothly. Like, there's a lot, at least in most weddings, typically, there's a lot of stuff that is asked of that person. In our case, it was basically just to, you know, keep the wife from losing her you-know-what. Like, there wasn't a whole lot, thankfully, that we asked of our people necessarily. Yep. But, like, in most, like, in more formal weddings than ours, like, you're getting asked to do a lot of planning, do a lot of scheduling, and then keep a lot of things running smoothly on the day of.
Yep.
And to not be able to have your person there with you while you're stressing out trying to keep her day happy, that's kind of a garbage thing to do.
Well, I mean, that kind of lends its hands to what I was talking about, too, because if she is dealing so much with the festivities, she wouldn't probably have too much time for him, and he wouldn't know anybody. He'd be there by himself. Probably, if we talked to the boyfriend, he's probably totally cool with it. But I'm hearing what you're saying. Ultimately, it comes down to, you know that you're having, you're going to have to exclude people. 125 people at a wedding is kind of small, considering, you know, she has, let's say she has 75, he has 75. Now you got family members in tow. That's 10 people right there. You're going to have to exclude a lot of people. Instead of maybe having the big dream wedding that, you know, blah, 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 you can have your dream wedding and still have it at a venue where it can hold more people or it's not as expensive.
Right. And I'm not necessarily saying that, I mean, maybe the boyfriend wouldn't have wanted to go. That's probably a thing. But at the same time, it's nice to be asked. It would have been the polite thing to do to invite him.
Well, it would have been nice to know from the get.
Right.
That,
like,
hey, listen, okay, here's what's going on. As opposed to, because sounds like it's, you know,
we're well into the planning stage, yeah.
3 weeks before the event. It's like,
the way, your significant other isn't invited. All right, let's get to plan this thing. Like, if you're going to do that, quite frankly, it's rude to have not asked that when you ask them to, or inform them of that before you ask them to take on that responsibility.
Yep.
That's not just something you drop in their lap later. Oh, by the way, also, your partner's not invited.
Right.
Like, that's, no, you lay that all out there at the jump. Like, I was asked to officiate a wedding in this August. Like, so that's going to be fun because I've never officiated a wedding before. But, like, one of the first things I was like, my wife is invited to this thing, right? Like, like, you don't know. Like, you gotta make sure that stuff's all clear up front.
Yep.
Because you don't want there to be hurt feelings later. And whether or not she continues, and you're kind of in a tough spot because it's going to be a lot harder for you to just say, like, well, you know what, then I guess I'm not doing this. That's not probably really not an option for you now.
No.
But there's going to be hurt feelings down the line. Oh, now, yeah. You're going to, okay, so this is apparently where I stay. I'm good enough to do all the work for you, but not good enough to have my partner be a part of the day.
Right.
Cool. Like, there's going to be resentment now forever in some capacity. They're just like, hey, but you're kind of stuck in it right now.
Yep.
Let's do one more of these real quick, shall we?
Sure.
Dear somebody who cares, we are having an issue with our daughter and son-in-law regarding the use of a guest house. They live a day's drive from us, so when we visit, we like to stay for several days. We try to visit at least monthly. We decided to find a home that had a mother-in-law unit separate from the main house. We helped substantially in the purchase of their home in order to have this unit be our separate space. We felt this was a better option than buying a small studio or condo to be close to them and the grandchildren. They were excited to do this with us. Now they're using it as a guest house for friends when we're not there. Often it isn't as clean as we leave it, and there's been conflict at times with friends visiting when we plan to be there. We don't feel comfortable sharing our private space. We have talked with them several times about our feelings, but the issue keeps recurring. Are we wrong to ask them not to have guests stay in our place?
It's a guest house on their property, right?
Yeah.
So it's their daughter's house.
Correct. They don't own. They may have helped substantially, as she claims, in the purchase of the home, but they don't own the thing.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a lot of controlling. It was probably the writer's plan all along. Oh, my daughter's moving an hour away or however long. I need to have control in her life somehow. I'll help you pay for the house. But that, just like weddings, you want to make sure you keep people at bay who are chipping in, because they think if they chip in, then they have to say, they've got a say in it. You're not buying stocks, okay? You're not a stockholder.
Yeah, if I've said it once on this show, I've said it a million times, he who makes the money makes the rules, and people will absolutely take it that way. That's why you don't accept any more help that is absolutely necessary from people who are wanting to contribute money, because they do feel like now they have a vote in how things are run, or they get a say in how things are going forward.
Multiple days in a month, every month, they're doing this, that they want to visit. Maybe the daughter and her husband is trying to tell you something.
You're coming out here way too much. Yeah. Like, my advice isn't necessarily for the writer of the letter. My advice is more towards the people that they're writing about. And that advice is, pay them back as soon as you can. You save up that money and give it back to them so you don't have to feel like you owe them anything.
Exactly.
Because they're going to hold this thing over your head like a sword forever. And like, they're apparently those kind of people. Like, we're never going to let you forget the fact that we helped you buy this house. So you do whatever you got to do to pay that off at the earliest possible convenience, so that they can't make that claim anymore, and you can do what you want with the house on your property.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, get out from underneath them financially and live your life. And the writer and her husband, or I can't remember who's writing the letter, but they just have to understand, hey, it is their house. And if they, the guest room, if they have you stay there, then you are a guest. You are a guest in the guest house.
Yeah, like this is not a condo that you own. This is a guest house and you're guests.
Well, that start of the letter makes it sound like a guest house for us to stay when we're there. And next thing, it sounds more like
you're trying to move into the thing.
Yeah, like, it's our place. No,
it's our place, and we're moving in full time.
Yeah, right.
That's kind of seem like it's trending towards that, does it not?
Well, or it's, when we're not there, we expect it to be empty because it's our space. No, it's the guest house. You have labeled it as such in your letter, the guest house. So when they have guests that aren't you, they stay in the guest house.
Exactly.
First of all, you have a guest house. You rich.
Yeah, I know. Like, these people are well off enough that they have a separate house to put their guests in. Must be nice.
Yeah, right.
That's, I already hate you for that. Just so you know, just putting that out there. Like, I hate you for this, but it is yours, and you ultimately get to decide what you do with your house on your property.
That's right.
So, yeah. Buy mom out if you got to get the to get her off your back about that, and then they can just kind of accept at that point that, hey, we'll extend the invite for you to stay here, but you don't get to dictate what we do with it when you're not here.
Yeah, send them a check and a DVD. Say, play me. They put in the DVD, and there's a wrecking ball just tearing down the guest house.
I mean, that seems like a waste of a perfectly good house.
No, just, hey, we decided to, we got our kennels license, and we decided to kennel a bunch of Great Danes. There's just, the house is just being tore up by Great Danes.
So you're probably going to have to do a little cleaning next time you come over.
Yeah.
And also, you're going to have to share your bed with the dogs.
So, no, it's a dog's bed, and hopefully the dog will share with you. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
Marmaduke, he's a real stickler.
He really is. I think we got time to squeeze in one more.
Sure.
Dear, oh God, not them, anybody but them. I recently reconnected with one of the nurses who was part of my care team when I was recovering from my strokes in 2016 and instantly became very good friends, sharing our deepest and personal secrets and our situations at home. We cried on each other's shoulders many nights and held hands to comfort each other. I told her about my divorce, and she told me about breaking up with her abusive fiancé and moving out. She was currently sleeping on a coworker's sofa. I offered her one of the extra rooms in my townhouse, and she accepted. Since then, we've had a few enjoyable dates and kissing sessions, and we sleep together every night with nothing more than holding hands and a goodnight kiss. She's very attractive, funny, compassionate, and a hard worker. She's the type of woman I dreamed about before I got married to my ex. My female interest and I have a lot in common, and one big difference, our age. I'll be 65 later this year. She'll be 55 next month. I think there's a chance for a special romance between the two of us, but can't decide if I should go all in for a romantic relationship. Help!
Well, you're living together, you're in the same bed, goodnight kisses, and everything else. The groundwork's there, dude. Just go for it.
Sounds like the decision's kind of already been made, no?
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't normally read the actual advice that the advice givers give, but... The letter writer here, or the advice giver, I guess, addressed, had some concerns about, well, she's struggling financially living in your home, so she's pretty vulnerable. You don't want to make a move that would make her uncomfortable. Don't go all in for a romantic relationship until you can have a conversation about your feelings and gently inquire about hers. They're already going out on dates and making out with each other and sleeping in the same bed. Yeah. I think they've had that conversation at some point.
They probably have. Yeah, it's... yeah.
It would seem on some level they're both into this, or they wouldn't have gone as far as they already have. I mean, maybe I'm just naive, but at the point where there was a woman sleeping in bed next to me every night and we're going out on dates and making out and so on and so forth, like, it seemed like, well, maybe she's into me. I don't know. Like, what? Yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah, the person who wrote that response was, you know, probably of the mindset that, you know, women should be allowed to give mixed signals, and that just infuriates a lot of people. But sounds like everything is right there.
Yeah, none of the signals seem particularly mixed here.
No, so I mean, yeah, I guess maybe hint around a little bit, but I mean,
how much hinting really needs to be done, like.
So, yeah, I mean, next time you're out and about, introduce her as your girlfriend. See what happens.
Well, I mean, there's certainly that you could do.
Go to the movies, get a popcorn box, and cut a hole in the bottom of the box. Oh, my God. I mean, there's some other things that you could do. I mean, sit down and, I mean, don't have like the big long conversation, because that could just make things creepy, like real quick. But
really, you know, more awkward. But I mean, also at some point, I mean... I guess there's probably a conversation that needs to happen. You're talking to a guy, look, you're talking to a dude who awkwarded his way into a relationship and ultimately a marriage here. There wasn't ever really a point where we sat down and had the conversation that, you know, are we going to be boyfriend and girlfriend now? It just kind of like happened, I guess.
Yeah.
Like it just, that wasn't a talk that happened in that sense. Like, admittedly, we're kind of dating for 2 months before we just kind of retroactively decided that, oh yeah, I guess that was our first date and we're a thing now. Like,
I guess this is official. Maybe when you're sleeping in the same bed with her, I'm not you, but the writer, maybe the kiss goodnight, maybe try a little more, you know, shoot your shot.
No, we are absolutely not necessarily condoning that. But, yeah, like, I think you're already, like, 75% of the way there, arguably probably more. Like, yeah. I don't really think that this is a... As far as the age thing, it's... Okay, yeah. you're 65, she's 55. Close enough.
Yeah.
I mean, if it were a 10-year age gap and you were, say, my age, maybe... It's a little more concerning for people, and maybe should be something more to consider for you, but you're both older people at this point. You've lived a relatively full life up to this point. I don't see that as being an issue here either. So I think it's fair to say, go for it. It looks like you're happy, she's happy. Why not take it further, see what happens?
There you go.
On that note, we got to hit a break. It is Happy Hour at Solid State Radio. It is Happy Hour, and man, we're getting down to the wire. Like we don't have a whole lot of time left in this season. Let's go ahead and just get right into it, as they say in hockey. Let's do that hockey. Maestro, the music, please. We have a game tonight.
Yes, we do. Against the Rangers.
The New York Rangers, just coming off of their big ol' line brawl the other night against New Jersey.
Yep, Matt Kempe,
Rempe.
I don't know if he's gonna be in lineup or not. I've heard if he's there's gonna be a suspension for him. But I mean, if he starts his malarkey, who on this Red Wings roster do you think is gonna answer that bell?
Who do you have that can?
Rasmussen. I mean, he is out. It sounds like he's got it.
Watch Larkin would try and fight or something stupid like that.
He would. And he'd just get like beat down, and there's our captain. We've seen what happens when the Wings don't have Larkin in the lineup. It gets ugly. So, I mean, that's a whole thing. This has been a long-standing discussion with the Detroit Red Wings, is you need to have somebody who can drop the mitts.
And you absolutely do need that person. We had one briefly, Klim Kostin, and then got
traded
rid of him.
San Jose, yeah.
For what, like a eighth round pick in 2016 or something, 2016-5 or something?
I think it was for Applebee's gift card.
Yeah, that's more than I thought you were going to get for him. Look at Stevie go.
Free appetizers and everything.
Who says that man doesn't know how to... play some tricks at the trade deadline, man.
I love me some spinach artichoke dip. but, I mean, I mean, we could have the same tired old argument.
And like, we probably will.
Well, I mean, you have to have somebody who can answer the bell against Matt Rempe. But it's like...
Otherwise, your team's just going to get pushed around.
And haven't had anybody. I mean, back in the old days, Sean.
Back in my day.
I mean, we had Koser and McCarty on the same team that could do that kind of stuff. You had some of your stars like Brendan Shanahan.
Sorry, I have to do this to you.
What? Oh, yeah.
Back in my day,
we had Brendan Shanahan, yes. We had the whole Nina sign up there, but he showed up anyway. he could drop the mitts. Even talking post Probert after he was already in Chicago, but you really don't get those guys. I mean, in that 08 team, you had a few guys. You had Aaron Downey, you had Dallas Drake.
It's basically the only purpose Aaron Downey served.
Exactly. But I mean, they tried that with Jordan Tutu. They tried it with Brad May. They tried it with a bunch of people,
They tried it with Luke Wachowski.
Luke Wachowski, yeah. He got scratched more than a lottery ticket. So it's...
They tried it with, was it Giovanni Smith?
Giovanni Smith, yeah. Well, yeah. I think they tried to thrust him in that role, but I don't know.
Because they certainly weren't keeping him around for his offensive production.
No, it really wasn't. And I was sorry to see him go, but I get it.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, as much as a lot of people want to bag on Tyler Bertuzzi, he was kind of that one guy who would mix things up. I don't think we've ever won a Stanley Cup without some sort of grinder on our team. I mean, I know that's a far reach, but this is something that Stevie needs to look into. This is something that the whole hockey world really needs to cultivate. I mean, yes. Even down, I mean, maybe not Pee Wee. We don't see
5-year-old kids
beating each other up.
Those little mini hockey games during intermission just turn into all-out brawls.
Yeah. And here come the goalies. One of them's crying. And they're all calling for their mommy. And here come the mommies. They're fighting.
Hell hath no fury like a hockey mom scorned.
Oh, yeah. It gets bad. But, I mean, you don't have... I mean, okay. You have a few players in the OHL that I've seen who, there's a couple players in for the Flint Firebirds and Saginaw Spirit that'll be willing to drop the gloves. But this is a kind of a role that needs to be cultivated in the hockey world. Somebody who can actually pull them aside, teach them how to fight. Teach them when there's a good reason to fight. Teach them the rules about hockey fights, because there are rules, folks.
Yeah.
This is not a backyard brawl here.
No.
Teach
him not to be Matt Rempe, basically.
Exactly, which brings us back to our original point that the Red Wings are going to be taking on the Blue Shirts, and I don't know. I mean,
they don't have an answer for him. Like,
if they somehow squeak out a win, then I am back on board the Red Wings playoff train. All aboard, come on, let's go.
I think that's what it would take for me, because I was with the game against the Lightning. Yeah. That's kind of where I was sitting. Like, if they lose this, season's over. Because like Tampa Bay seems to be the one team you seem to have their number fairly reliably.
Yes.
If you can't beat them right now, then you may as well kiss your shot at the playoffs goodbye.
Yeah,
and knowing that there was a very likely shot that you were going to lose to New York tonight.
Well, I mean, let's just say. Let's think positive. Let's say they find a knock somewhere for Shesterkin. They're able to pull it out. I'd be back on the bandwagon.
That would be enough to do it for me, I think.
But, I mean, New York, would they have the gall to put in their backup for? I mean, I hope so.
Yeah, I've not seen lineups yet. I've not seen any indication. We're talking 2 days of rest, so it could really... It could go either way. Like, I could see Shesterkin going tonight just because, I mean, can you even name the backup for the New York Rangers?
Yeah, no.
I couldn't.
I have no idea.
Jonathan Quick, 38-year-old Jonathan Quick.
Oh, well, that's not good. Because I think a 38-year-old Jonathan Quick could handle the Red Wings very well.
Well, so far this season... 17 wins, 5 losses, a .254 goals against average, .913 save percentage.
He's the backup.
He's the backup. He actually has a better goals against than Shesterkin, and he has a slightly higher save percentage at 38 years old. Yes.
Shesterkin must have it in his contract. I must start this many games, or you know.
Well, here's. Yeah, but to be fair, Jonathan Quick's pushing 40 here. Like he could, I don't think he could start 40 games in a year anymore.
But he's
like
pushing 40, but I mean, look, he's pushing a good. He's pushing a Vezina is what he's doing.
He's only played 25 games, and like Shesterkin's so far played 51 games this season.
Yeah,
if Jonathan Quick tried to do that, he'd probably be retired.
Okay,
he'd have pulled a groin muscle or something by now.
Yeah, hi, Red Wings. Look, I got some good news and bad news. It's all in the same package. The Rangers are putting in their backup goalie. They're like, ah, damn it.
And he's actually well-rested enough to give you a hard time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, then looking at the Red Wings schedule after that, you got Buffalo. Let's say they found a way to get past either Shesterkin or Quick, and they beat Buffalo.
They should beat Buffalo.
And, I mean... It looks promising that you can beat Washington, Pittsburgh, maybe not Toronto. Toronto's looking pretty tough.
I don't like your odds against Toronto, but no. You know who I do like your odds against? Montreal. And guess who you're playing 2 times before the end of this season?
Home and home?
Montreal.
Montreal Canadiens. Les Habitants.
I like that. I like those odds a lot. You should be able to take, because they currently sit at the bottom of the Atlantic Division.
Yeah.
Bottom of the Atlantic Ocean, quite frankly, yeah. Probably a better place for him. But.
Yes, very much so. I mean, okay, so the NHL schedule actually has smiled favorably on the Red Wings, where they
for the first time ever,
they actually could
squeaked their way into that second wild card spot.
Well, you know, they've kind of screwed you over so much with the with the draft lottery. It seems like we should get some sort of help somewhere else.
Sure, yeah, it would make sense to me, but I guess we'll see. And it's gonna be fun to watch.
It's gonna be a good game. Like I do worry certainly that you're going to get manhandled by the because the Rangers have a couple guys who fit that physical, gritty, pesty mold in yes, Trouba and yes, Rempe.
Do. Yes, they do. And you need that people in the roster. I was talking to everybody about that because those guys will shake you off of your game.
They absolutely will. Like they'll rattle everybody, and they might just run Dylan Larkin right into the boards. Like, it would just take him out with a cheap hit to the head or something. Like, I mean, fingers crossed, knock on wood, that doesn't happen.
Yeah,
but
right.
This is the kind of thing that both of those guys do. Rempe's already done it twice in the, like, 10, 14 games he's played this season.
Yep, you know what he's about. So hopefully there's somebody on that roster that will answer that bell. I mean, we'll find out. It's going to be interesting.
There's going to be like a last-second call-up tonight for the game. Although I don't know who in Grand Rapids could really answer that bell.
Ladies and gentlemen, signing a one-year contract, number 25, Darren McCarty.
Well, he's already hanging around the stadium, so, you know, why not?
Yeah.
Just hanging out waiting for, you know, for something to do. Maybe that needs to be it. They need something because this isn't gonna go very well for you if you don't have some semblance of physical presence there to lay the smackdown on somebody. It's not the league's just. I know the league's like we said. The league's not just built towards, you know, promoting enforcers anymore. Certainly, but
you have to have an answer for somebody like Rempe.
You absolutely have.
And I don't think the Red Wings have one. I can't think of anybody on that roster up and down who is. I mean. Mo Sider. Yeah, we saw him drop the gloves, but do you really want him going out there and getting kicked out of games or hurting himself?
He's the only skilled defenseman you have. No, of course not.
No. I just say give a...
What if we send Petrie or Hull out there?
There you go. Petrie, here's a speed bag. Or Petrie's going to have one of those blow-up bop bags that we had back in the 80s. And practice on that because you're going after Rempe. Rempe is number 79. Hit him in the head.
I mean, you got to do something, right? I mean, you might as well throw out someone there that you don't have any other use for.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to have to happen because the Red Wings cannot keep getting run over like this. And you're about to hit the steamroller.
You're really getting dangerously close to that. Like the Rangers are going to be the toughest team you've played this season.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is a matchup that concerns me immensely.
Oh, and I hate the fact that we devoted so much time to Matt Rempe. I hate this kid so much, but I can't stop talking about him. He won the NHL broadcast award already.
he really has. He's become one of the
biggest. Center's talking about him and everything else. So maybe we have our NHL villain that used to be Roenick or Probert or Chelios.
Or Marchand.
Marchand, yes. Get the Rat in here. Let's sign the Rat over to
everyone. Yeah, everyone keeps forgetting he exists now. Like,
he's a pest. There's a difference between a cement head, a goon, and a pest.
But he's a little bit of, here's the thing, Rempe's a bit of both.
Because, yeah.
I mean, you have the obvious, like, he wants to fight, but you also, and you have the dirty hits. You've also got kind of him going and taunting the waving goodbye to Curtis McDermott
yeah.
when he tried to
yeah.
fight him after the last big hit.
Yep.
Like, so there is a little bit of that in there as well, I think. And that just makes it that much worse when you see him get away with the things he gets away with.
Yep.
Well, maybe we'll get lucky and the Wings will have an answer for him or have some sort of nice little one-day signing that can take care of this Matt Rempe problem for good. One can only hope, right?
Number 26, Joe Koser.
Oh, if only he were come back to save us right now. It is happy hour. We'll come back and close this thing out next. Stick around. We'll be right back.
over. Jack Daniels!
Let me tell you, Adam is in his glory today.
I'm telling you, this is fantastic.
You get to talk about your favorite thing other than the 1997-98 Red Wings, and that is
Kiss.
Kiss is making the news right now because it was announced this morning. They sold their catalog, their name, and likeness for over $300 million.
Wow. Okay, so I knew about the selling the music, but their name, image, and likeness?
Yep. Pop House Entertainment, the Sweden-based music investment firm behind ABBA's Voyage hologram show. Oh, here we go.
Yep. Oh, boy.
The terms of the deal were not officially announced. Bloomberg and Associated Press said it was worth upwards. I'm hearing $350 million. And I guess this is...
I can't believe they settled for that little.
So ABBA, this is the whole start of this. ABBA has a show over in London where... And it's there. It sounds like this is going to the Sphere in Vegas where it's holograms, a live band, but holograms of the members of ABBA in their heyday playing the songs of ABBA.
So is anyone in ABBA actually still alive?
Like, all four of them.
But they just refuse to go tour? Or
well, yeah. That's been the big thing because the guys want to go. The women are like, they know exactly what's going on. And nobody can deny that I'm right by this. The women know that they don't look like they did in the 70s. And they don't want to have that kind of, wow, they packed on the pounds. Whoa. Because, I mean, every celebrity will tell you, it's almost like you signed a contract. I will look like this for the rest of my life. And it didn't happen. Even when I was like 12, 13 years old, MTV and VH1 started playing old episodes of The Monkees. And so I became a fan of The Monkees. And so they came back in 86. And even I was like, oh my God, who is that?
Oh my God, these people actually age?
They don't look like they're... I mean, it was so superficial, but 12, 13 years old. Who cares?
Right.
They have spurned a lot of money to go out and tour and everything else. So they found a stupid medium. And I'm that's where I'm going with this is holograms and with a live band at least. And yeah, that's what has been going on in London. It looks like it's going to be making its way to the United States. Kiss.
Who would pay money for that though? Like I'm sorry. Like I'm sure
it's going. Well, here's the thing is ABBA. You haven't been able to see a live show with ABBA since 1981. So there's a market right there for you. This whole Kiss avatar thing, this is where it all links in with Kiss because...
Yeah, they promoted that at the end of their last show.
Yep. And, oh, the next thing, oh, yeah. Oh, I thought you were going to bring up Ace and Peter and Bruce and... Nope, we're just going to talk about, hey, look, cartoons of us. Yay, good night, everybody. And so that's what's going on. But the fact that they sold their likeness, their name and everything to this company is just... insane. I did not see that coming one bit.
You gotta imagine it's a little bit of a slap in the face too to Ace and Peter, because like, okay, so you're telling me Gene and Paul just sold our name, image, and likeness to this company, and we're not getting a cut of any of that. I'm sure they're not.
Well, I haven't heard any of that.
But how much you want to bet that within a week here, Ace is going to be on Eddie Trunk's radio show announcing he's filing a lawsuit?
Yeah, probably.
I would lay money on it.
I'm talking to my lawyer, and we're gonna have a lawsuit against Paul and Gene and Peter. And Peter hasn't done anything, but we're gonna file a lawsuit against him we gotta cover all bases. My lawyer, he's working the night shift at a bowling alley. So when he's done with that, we're gonna hash things out. Because I mean it's my name.
It means we're definitely going to end up seeing that damn Avatar show because I don't know how else they're going to recoup their money on it.
I don't know if I'm going to spend one dime on that.
Because, I would.
Because here I've had a problem with like these big bands going out there and using backtracking. But now they're trying to tell me, Adam, hey, we want you to spend the same money to come in to see the show, but everything's pre-recorded, even the band. Because at least at some point I could be like, all right, yeah, pre-recorded, or any band, pre-recorded, but I'm still...
In the same room.
In room with them. We're still having a moment. It's a live music moment. Let's have fun. Now it's just like, hey, here's a video of us. Keep shelling out that money. Pay for parking. Beers are still $15.
What did I pay? Yeah, what did I just spend $250 on pavilion seats for? Someone remind me.
Somebody explain to me what the heck I just kissed. I love you very much, but I am resigning my post in the Kiss Army.
Wow. You heard that live on the air, folks. I can't believe you just said that.
I would like to. I mean, I still have my good times. I've still got all my albums.
He's going to be buried in a Kiss coffin, folks.
You afford a Kiss.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what kind of life insurance policy Dorothy has on you. She's probably get like $1 million when you croak.
Just cremate me and put me in like a Kiss Pez dispenser. I don't care.
I don't know. I don't know with your alcohol content if we can cremate you, Adam.
Oh, yeah, you can. I mean, the fire will last for 3 days, but I mean, it's fine.
On that note, we got a little bit of business we got to take care of in our weekly attempt to cleanse our souls. Happy Hour would like to apologize to Buffalo, Rachel Bolin, Eric Cronwell, Ace Frehley, Eddie Trunk, Paul Stanley, Gene Simmons, Scrooge McDuck, Tom Selleck, Matt Rempe, Montreal Canadiens, the Pac-2, and Rutgers. We're sorry! On that note, stick around. A full hour of local original music comes your way next on a little show we like to call Solid State Sessions. All being well, talk to you Monday afternoon at 3. See ya!